This is the Growth Stage Podcast, and here's your host, David Vogelpohl.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Growth Stage Podcast by FastSpring, where we discuss how SaaS and digital product companies can grow revenue, build meaningful products, and increase the value of their businesses. I'm your host, David Vogelpohl. I support the digital product community as part of my role here at FastSpring, and I love to bring the best of the community to you here on the Growth Stage Podcast. In this episode, we're going to be talking about how you can use PLG, product-led growth, and sales-led growth together to drive exponential results for your business. And joining us for that conversation is someone who I personally know has a lot of experience in this from times we worked together in the past, and certainly in this person's current role. But I'd like to welcome to Growth Stage, Mr. John Eitel. John, welcome.
Hey, David. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so glad to have you here. I know you and I have been through quite a few adventures on this front, and I'm sure you've had plenty of your time there at DemandBase, and I won't give away too much of the lead here, but really excited about this interview. So for those watching and listening, what John is going to talk about today, really his adventure solving growth puzzles with organizations like Canva, DemandBase, and others, using both PLG sales-led growth motions, PLG and sales-led growth motions together in order to drive exponential results. So really looking forward to the conversation and digging into this. And I think there's, you know, this tension there with product-led growth and sales-led growth. And it's like PLG is supposed to replace sales-led growth, but that doesn't really work in B2B. And so this notion that they should work together, I think, is really powerful. John, to kick it off, I guess I'll ask you the same question I ask every question here, or every guest here on Growth Stage. What was the first thing you bought online?
Gosh, the first thing I bought online, it's so hard for me to remember back to that. Like it's like, you know, kind of like asking about the first time you took a breath, right? It feels like we've been doing it for so long. Maybe was it CDs? I mean, I feel like, maybe that would be it. I think being a big music guy, I kind of feel like being able to buy music online in an actual non-MP3 format, physical discs sent to my house, maybe through Columbia House or something like that, would probably be like one of my earliest memories of using the internet to buy things.
I really like the restraint you had in buying your music back in those days instead of the file sharing move. Really commendable there, John.
Yep.
All right. So tell me a little bit about DemandBase and what your role is there.
Yeah. So DemandBase, has an interesting, I would say, kind of origin story, but you know, obviously we started out in, you know, account-based marketing, you know, which really, you know, was tied to, you know, being able to make very targeted, you know, purchases of advertising so that you could go after, you know, specific, you know, buyers with messaging that was relevant and kind of follow them wherever they go on the internet. And, you know, I think it's a great strategy to be used when you have a very defined, you know, ICP that you're going after. So if you're going after the, you know, 1,000 CIOs in the Fortune 1000, right? You can use, you know, we used our platform to be able to target them and make sure that, you know, when they went to the internet, they were receiving your messages, you know, prioritized. You know, since then we've taken our DSP and a lot of the tools and power that it gives us to be able to, you know, be able to get intense signals and be able to see like when people are looking online for you, when they're searching for your competition, maybe searching for things that's, you know, really, you know, relevant to, you know, needs you can help them solve there. And then, you know, we took intent and then we added in, you know, some acquisitions that we've made over the last 3-4 years. And we've built this complete, you know, I would say go-to-market console where sales and marketing now, you know, live in, work together, can action on a lot of these very targeted strategies to be able to meet customers where they are, you know, with the right, you know, message, the right time. And make sure that you're landing things more effectively. And so I do, you know, I define it in a lot of ways, but it is kind of sales and marketing magic in that you can be very prescriptive in the way that you go to market here. You can land, you know, your touch points more effectively and hopefully win together more effectively, which is the power of what we do.
And what do you do there, John?
So I am the chief sales officer, which means I lead sales for, you know, us globally, you know, across, you know, all of our different regions and capacities. So, you know, it's been great to kind of drive, build, and kind of grow their sales strategy here.
Excellent. Well, that's really interesting to hear. And I know that, you know, as we think of product-led growth, this idea of your ICP and what they experience, you know, you were talking about the personalized advertising, you know, kind of ABM focused, following you around the web. And I know that these same kind of activities play out on the product side. So this dance between how we go to market and how customers and potential customers experience our products. Seems like there's some interesting overlap there. So earlier I described briefly product-led growth. I'm just curious, like what you think though, what does that mean to you? What is product-led growth?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, I've actually had the benefit and the ability to be a part of some pretty cool, you know, product-led growth stories. You know, David and I worked together at a company that had elements of product-led growth. So it's probably where I, you know, began kind of my fascination with it, and, you know, went to a company called Canva and took them through a lot of their, you know, series of kind of, you know, growth and expansion into new regions and markets. So I feel like I got a lot of, like, I would say, the MBA of kind of doing it in motion here of PLG, but it is, you know, it's a new way of kind of looking at, you know, how you attract and, you know, kind of grow customers using the product as the hook, to be able to get them, you know, into your kind of funnel and being able to use the, you know, product to drive usage, adoption, expansion, you know, throughout the life cycle of a customer. So, you know, as opposed to the old kind of, you know, method, which is, you know, sales-led growth, which, you know, we'll talk about probably next year, you know, really, you know, kind of flips things around to use the product as the entry point to be able to attract, retain, and grow customers.
Yeah, it feels like the promise of it is something akin to build a great product. People will organically be attracted to it. They will sign up for the product on some form, maybe through a free trial. And then that'll be so amazing that they'll want to pay. And then after the fact, your in-product experiences will be so amazing, they'll want to spend more on more things. And so it's like this promise of almost like automated acquisition and upgrades, I feel like underpins the kind of core value people put forth with PLG. You think that's a fair way to look at it, or how might you think of it?
I think it is. And I think it's great too, in that it puts, you know, puts product at the center of the universe. It doesn't mean that, you know, any of those things like sales and marketing are less important, you know, but I think it just changes the way that you, you know, embrace these things. And it puts, it puts emphasis on, you know, making sure that you're building a great product, right? If that's your entry point, then it has to be a great experience. It has to be, you know, something that has some virality to it, right? Or else this thing doesn't work or take off. I think that's kind of one of the core tenets. And so, you know, it's what I really love about it is that you build that focus around the product, and then, you know, you put the right touch points to kind of enable that customer journey. And it just turns out to be a more effective, you know, probably way for a lot of companies to acquire customers. It matches well to, I think, the way that the buying behaviors are shifting, right? I think that people want to self-serve when they can, you know, they want to, you know, not just hear from you about how great your product is, they want to experience it, you know, and so this gives them that ability to be the driver in this situation.
So it's kind of like this idea that like good UX, good product experience is always good. And these debates are always funny, like what's better, you know, PLG or sales-led growth, or like human written content versus AI written content. And like a lot of the times the answer is, well, what if you mash them both together? Maybe that's the best answer for the puzzle we're solving here. And so I feel like that kind of underlying promise of almost like costless revenue, like your product department's going to generate all your revenue for you, is probably short-sighted. And coupling that, especially with B2B, with sales-led growth missions, you know, feels like the winning combination. So now we've kind of established what PLG means to you. What does sales-led growth mean to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is the more traditional, you know, version of, you know, basically, you know, sales that we know, or we've known historically. And it really is, you know, very much human driven, right? It's sales and, you know, marketers, you know, kind of creating the right messaging, going to market with the right sales techniques and tactics. You know, it's largely driven by humans is what I like to say. You know, that's the piece that really kind of makes it differentiated from a product-led growth strategy.
And so I think like one of the benefits for me on the SLG side is the benefit of context and adaptability. So in other words, if I'm a prospect and I'm looking at a product and I'm going through a sales team and talking maybe to a sales engineer, if it's like that kind of product or whatever it is, that I can get a lot more context a lot more quickly. And it makes up for a lot of bad product experiences, right? You're like, oh yeah, this is how you do that job to be done. And so I feel like that's one of the strengths of SLG is really to understand, better understand the value, but also understand how configurable the product might be or how it might fit with your particular use case. And I find that that's near impossible to replicate in a product context. What do you think about that?
No, it's a good comment. I mean, I think like I put emphasis on, human, for a reason there and chose that word wisely. I think that that's exactly it, David, that I feel like, you are able to be able to smooth the bumpy road of a product experience with humans, right? And the ability to gather feedback and be adaptive. And so I think the human element is really great there, for certain areas. And I think it is the way that we've always kind of historically done things. And so I think we'll talk, a bit about some of the nuances of different strategies, but I would say like in some places, like that's an expectation, right? I think that there's a couple of different trends we're seeing. People want to buy, they want to self-serve, when they can, or buy, without a friction filled experience. Right. But then there's sometimes where it's like, well, I want to talk to a human. Right. And so like there's certain places where I think a sales led experience has to be there, or has to be a component of it, because I think people buy from people, at the end of the day. Like that's that adage is still true to this day. And I think there's certain elements, that really have an important, point and differentiation there.
Now, there are tensions that emerge within organizations between product teams and sales teams over when PLG should be the focus versus sales-led growth. You talked about self-serve maybe as one example where a product group might favor self-serve motions over, say, demo-based motions, or at least motions that require a demo maybe before a trial, like that kind of thing. And I think a lot of orgs tackle this in different ways. Sometimes there's big rivalries and lots of tension. Sometimes there's more of like a working relationship where we're both trying to improve on both sides. Our time at WP Engine reminded me of that, actually. But what do you think, what are the financial benefits of working together? Like maybe putting your company hat on for a minute instead of your sales hat, but like what benefits can folks maybe think about or expect if you're working with them both together? Like why do this?
Yeah. Well, I think it varies, by company, space, product, right? I think there are lots of reasons to think about this. And I think you mentioned, my background is a puzzle solver, and I've said that a few times, but I think that's what I enjoy about what I get to do, because I think you have to be able to be a, sales, or go to market kind of puzzle solver, problem solver to figure out like what is the right thing. And I think, the interesting thing is I think a lot of folks think of this decision as very binary. Like you have to do one or the other, or else. And I think that there is, a place for combining, these things. There's a place to think about like timing of when to use one over the other. There's all those things that kind of play in. And so I think like my advice always is, someone who mentors and advises many companies in the, PLG, SLG, PLS, insert TLA here, world, is that you have to be, adaptive, and you have to be able to look at these things in lots of different ways. And I think, just using my Canva experience as a, kind of a bit of a story around that even too, David, was, when I was brought in, like Canva grew, for their first 6 years of their company, 5 years of their company without a sales team. They grew with all product led growth. They were largely in consumer. And I think, consumer can get by doing that motion, and it's a very beautiful, efficient thing. But they found that people were starting to take their product to work, right? Like kind of like Dropbox started to show up in enterprises, Canva started to show up in enterprises as well. And so, they tried to use PLG to attack the enterprise solely on its own, and they found quickly that, it was great for getting entry points, and PLG can be this perfect way for us to get our toe in the door, But what we eventually found out was that there was like stall points where, you know, we found that, you know, lots of companies of 10, 20 employees would pull out a credit card, sign up overnight to use Canva. And, you know, there was a belief that, you know, gosh, if we go to bed and wake up tomorrow, 20 will be 40 and then it'll be 60. And they never really kind of grew beyond those stall points once we defined them. And the reason and rationale for that was that, you know, they, you know, were being used largely in a very departmental manner. So if they wanted to expand outside of the department, it meant that we'd have to probably engage procurement. It meant that we'd probably have to engage security to make sure that we were compliant with their standards. We would, you know, probably have to tip some radars, because I think a lot of these folks had actually done this just kind of going rogue with departmental expenditures that they could make on their own. You know, and so it meant that we were going to have to raise the visibility on this in the right ways to be able to go from, you know, 20 users to thousands of users at these big companies. And so that was when it was, you know, really important for them to think about, like, when do you bring in this augmentation strategy of sales-led growth, and how do we leverage it in the right way? And, you know, back to my commentary about this being a very binary thing, you know, I think sometimes people are like, okay, good. So are we going to flip all the way to sales-led growth? And it's like, no, like, you know, we need to think about, you know, the elements of each and how to use them in the right ways. And so when we built the sales team on top of the product-led growth strategy, you know, it was fun to think about, like, okay, not everybody gets a sales experience. Like, let's still let people self-serve. Let's let people get interest. Let's let people start to use the platform. And then when they get near to this like stall point, like, let's make sure that we insert a sales resource at that time to say, like, we'd like to talk to you about expanding your use case with us. Let's talk to you about how we can you know, begin to develop our relationship together and work together in a more meaningful way. And that was when we would bring in the sales resource. And so it became very much complementary, you know, with a lot of other pieces that we kind of layered in more and more over time. And it was fun to kind of crack that puzzle and mature that organization. But that was, you know, a lot of it. And it was, again, like finding that right kind of tipping point of balance and when to insert, you know, which strategy at the right time.
Yeah. So that balance, it sounds like, is the key there. In thinking about through the stories and examples you just provided, it sounded like one financial benefit of that approach is new ARR acquisition, right? In the case of Canva, you were talking about how layering in the sales-led growth on top of the PLG, you could leverage the PLG for those entry points and then sales-led growth to expand across departments. So you're opening up bigger customers with higher MRR. It sounded, of course, like that would then equate to more ARPU, which, you know, for most businesses is going to be a positive driver of the evaluation. And then you also talked a lot about upgrades there, and this is being really influenced, it sounds like, by the ARPU. In other words, lower ARPU transactions are less likely to be sales assisted, higher ARPU ones are more likely. And with those self-serve smaller accounts, there might be an enterprise upgrade there sitting around that's, you're not going to get 20,000 of MRR or something from a CTA in a product page, right? Yep. And that's, am I getting that right?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. So yeah, I think the key elements are, you know, there are some definite financial implications of like when to use one over the other. You know, acquiring customers obviously, you know, feels like the easiest, you know, least, you know, expensive way to acquire customers. But there's also elements of like, you know, growth that can be unlocked by putting a sales-led strategy in place over that.
Yeah. Okay. That makes a ton of sense. And I know you've worked at a few orgs that have leveraged PLG, and obviously your perspective is limited to your own experiences, but do you find most orgs favor investments in one or the other? Like people addicted to PLG, and so they're just trying to make everything PLG. Have you seen that they've been blended? Or I mean, I'm sure it depends on the company, but like, what are your observations there?
Yeah, there's a lot going on. And I think, you know, it is a, you know, it's an interesting topic to bring up. I would say, obviously, like consumer, for sure. Like, I think consumer really drove a lot of the success of PLG. And then it started to move into these new kind of contexts of B2B. And I think that's been, you know, fun to see. You know, over the last few years, too, like PLG really saw a rise. And there was a lot of great, you know, stories around it, like the Calendly's, the Dropboxes, you know, the Miros of the world, the, you know, Canvas, you know, all these great stories that started to come up. And so, you know, I would often get, you know, people asking for advice on like how and when do we bring this in? And so I would say, like, I think there was this like started with consumer, moved into the B2B context. I think there was a time of like, everybody should be doing it. Why aren't you doing it? And I think that's settled out a little bit in that, you know, it's not so extreme of like, everybody should do it. Why shouldn't we do it now? You know, and it's back to some sort of, reality, which is great. I think that's, you know, the good thing about like balance and like when things get out of control, the pendulum swung kind of maybe a little too far, but it's now back to the middle. And I do believe that everybody should have some element of it in their kind of playbook or strategy. There's lots of different ways to use it in different contexts. And so it's not not that very binary, like, you know, we've got to go all in on it and bet the farm. It's like, let's place it in the right place to drive the right impact here.
You know, and it's funny, the examples you gave, we often in these kind of conversations talk about B2B and B2C. And the reality is, especially for the mid-market, a lot of that B2B is a self-serve motion, right? If you're buying Canva for your three salespeople at your small law, or maybe not a law firm has salespeople, but I don't know, insurance firm or something like that, then credit card transaction online makes all the sense in the world, right? And I'm never going to upgrade that much. So like, let's just do it that way. But you know, as my org gets bigger and my needs get more complex, I probably need to talk to somebody about that. And that's where sales-led growth comes in. And you know, it's funny because I think one trend I've noticed is a trend towards trying to make that B2B process easier for folks. Even as simple as like the transaction or payment can be very complicated for sales teams and, custom systems created to support all that, funky ways to create invoices and send out places for people to enter their credit card for a sales assisted transaction. Do you ever get jealous of the ease of how PLG is kind of just like go through, click a button and pay? Maybe demand base has that really well built out or something. So I'm just curious, like from the grand level, do you think those sales led growth motions could be easier and more intuitive for the reps and the prospects?
100%. And I do think like, there's lots of times where you feel tension between the different, kind of models and versions and things like that. But I think like the world is all going to easier transactions and easier to do business with and easier to, to do the things that we want to do more effectively. And so I think PLG, being relatively new means that these companies, were built in the last, kind of decade. And so I think they've got the benefit of modernization and building for, the right foundation for scale. And so I do think that that is, something that they've got going for them. And I think we can all learn and model from, I think that's, even if you've been in business for 20 years, I think we should be all looking at our processes and thinking of ways to like make it easier and more efficient to do business. And I think there was a belief that's changed or maybe a misbelief that we had that's, you had to, gate content or you had to add friction in the system, right? Like let's gate content, like let's make them talk to a salesperson, because that's where the value is, And, I think that pendulum is shifting now where it's like, let's also make it really easy for them just to do the things they want to do and not make their life more complicated. But I think if they want to also be able to talk to real person, like let's fast track them to that experience too, right? And being able to provide both. And so I like that. I think actually, even in past worlds, like ones you and I've worked in, like I think we should be looking at that from like legal perspective. Like we were, heavily in invested in making it really easy to like make our terms easy to accept and click through, right? And it was like, let's just, not overly complicated. Let's not drop a binder on somebody. Let's, put in the right protections for the business, but make it easy for people to just say, okay, I can agree to this, even the biggest companies in the world, right? And then it's like, okay, it means we can use less legal resources. It means we can slow down transactions or we can speed up transactions. When we've historically slowed them down. And I think that's just a good example of where we should be looking for these pockets of efficiency. It would not only make us better as businesses, but it would probably make, customer experience buying from us even better.
Yeah. Cause like as a buyer, you're thinking like, not only am I going to have multiple meetings now that I'm going through a sales team, but I'm also going to have a complicated transaction on some level. And, obviously for teams that work for companies that haven't figured that process out on the back end very well, that means probably cramming a bunch of transaction admin time at the end of the month. Like when you're trying to get deals closed, like these can be very disruptive, not just for the prospects, but for the sales teams themselves. In your experience working with product teams and, you know, the sales teams you were leading, what are some common tensions that arise? Like one example might be, I don't know, like the product team figures out the free trial process really, really well. And now there's people are self-serving instead of going through a sales team. Have you ever had to deal with like quota attainment issues or like target changes? Like, or maybe there's other tensions that you think are more relevant, but how do you think about those tensions?
Yeah. I mean, I think like, you know, as you're going through change, there is always going to be tension, right? And anytime you're evolving or adapting a strategy, there'll be tension, you know, with the old way of doing things and the new way of doing things. And, you know, the beauty is always in how you navigate those. And I remember even, you know, with you and I working together in the past with what we kind of had our elements of PLG on, which was self-serve for our customers, right? We had to have that constant debate of like, is the sales led cannibalizing the self-serve, right? And, you know, vice versa, right? And so I think like that's always one that you're, you know, want to be make sure you're mindful of and that you're not, you know, feeding one, you know, with stuff that would naturally just kind of flow through another, et cetera, and taking from one to make one look better. And so I think that's like kind of step one is like, how do you make sure that you're not cannibalizing, you know, one for the other there? I think, you know, it can, but we had a lot of, you know, kind of even more kind of scaled nuances in that they'd never had a sales team before. So building this whole sales team, you know, from scratch was, you know, it was in a way kind of like an introduction of kind of a whole new thing and a greenfield motion. And, you know, we had to be able to think about like, when do you put a sales resource on some of these customers? And again, you know, if you're that, your example of the 3-person insurance agency, right, that just bought for their sales team, and they're probably never going to grow. They're a regional insurance, you know, firm of 10 people, right? Probably don't want to have a seller ever touch that, right? And so like making sure that you have like hard and fast rules of like what a sales experience is and what it isn't, and make sure that you don't deviate from them. And so, you know, we defined that early to say that, hey, our enterprise offering, which was what our sales led, you know, group focused on, was how do we bring, you know, Canva into B2B? We wouldn't go after that 10-person, you know, group, because we knew that 3 people would always probably be 3 people, regardless if we talked to them for hours or weeks, right? And so really trying to focus your resources up market, and we targeted kind of the mid-market all the way up to the biggest brands in the world there. And so that was kind of a, you know, our first kind of like hard and fast rule of like, let's make sure that, you know, we don't overburden, you know, kind of people with talking to sales. Let's make sure we use the sales resources on the accounts that matter. And that was really helpful. Like there's, you know, there's 2 sides of the tension as well. Like if you've always been PLG, you know, and you've gotten, you know, really addicted to that, you know, ability to acquire customers, you know, affordably and easily, you know, there was a lot of like conversations I had with the CFO of like, do we really need a sales team? Like, do we really need, you know, this, could we just make a few tweaks to the product and we wouldn't need a sales team, right? You know, and so, you know, you have to be kind of like comfortable with having those conversations when going through this, you know, evolution there. And so, you know, it was a good, healthy tension, I would say, and a good dialogue that we were always having. And it was, you know, also, I would say largely, you know, stepped through, and that I was like, I'm not going to overuse that. We're not going to overpay, you know, salespeople to touch customers that don't need that touch. Like, let's put them on the ones that matter. And let's prove that they do matter, right? And like, are we able to move these customers from a, you know, a 40-person stall point, like I described, of like, you know, departmental usage to thousands of users? How do we take them from, you know, kind of like a very kind of, you know, nascent entry points to, you know, a complete ELA where everybody in the company gets access to it and they see it in their Okta, you know, as a software package that's, you know, supplied by their employer. And that's a whole different motion versus, you know, pulling out a credit card to sign up.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You know, I think from the rule set perspective, it sounds like a really clever way to help alleviate some of those tensions in terms of like when sales will focus on a prospect or a customer for upgrades and when they won't. You know, and it's funny because it's easy to sit back on like an interview like this and break out our abacus and say, well, just go with the thing that makes the most money for the company, right? But the reality is you have teams on the ground, you have quotas to hit. And so one of the things that really kind of bugs me, I feel, in business are things I call invisible lines, where we make some sort of attribution line within the business to, you know, give credit to this group or that group for this, that, or the other. But the reality is the sales team wouldn't sell anything, and the product team wouldn't have anybody using their products, particularly on those bigger customer side, without some form of selling effort. And so at FastSpring, we follow the product-led sales philosophy, really where we look at our product and how it can support our sales funnels. So it might be a CTA that has a Chili Piper link in it to schedule time with a sales engineer, something like that. Do you have any examples of when you felt product and the sales team have worked really well together on something from your past?
Yeah, no, it's a great reference to the invisible lines theory. I think that's actually something I felt, but I haven't heard in that way. So I think that's really cool. Yeah, no, I think that's the key too. I think that's, you know, as I advise others about like going through this journey, you know, I think you have to be heavily partnered with products, and more so than any place I've ever been. Like, I think, like, you know, sales and product always have a kindred relationship, and that they, you know, feedback flows both ways, and one owns the product, one owns the customer relationship, you know, the connection has to be strong. But I think we really thought about it in a, you know, kind of three concentric circles model of, like, you know, sales, marketing, and product all together, you know, working on these things. And I think that that's something that comes with companies going through this evolution, is like, realizing that we're all equally, you know, kind of in this together. And, you know, that's so important to establish that early. And so I'd say, like, that's something that I've seen and sensed and felt work. You know, I think, like, it means once you kind of make that shift and you really build that strong foundation, you know, you have to have the telemetry in place to be able to see customer behaviors better, understand, like, when to insert those sales, you know, kind of touch points. And I think if you're working on this in the right way, in the right, you know, sophisticated organization, like, product will define that with you and help kind of set and move those lines occasionally too with each other, where, you know, we started to spot, like, these customers, we you know, using Canva as an example, Canva is a design tool for everyday people. And so we knew that basically if someone joined, you know, at a big company, and, you know, that was a great sign. So that was like kind of like the tip of the, like, beginning of the conversation. If we saw them create, you know, 15 to 20 designs in a month, like, that was another great sign. If we saw them inviting people to join a team with them, you know, another great sign, right? So then we knew, okay, those are the things that needed to happen, you know, again, before a salesperson got involved, you know. So it was like, okay, you know, we were getting a lot of this great telemetry from the product organization. You know, it's great for me to think about almost, you know, like you would at an SDR. It's like, okay, well, how do I nurture them through that before I get a salesperson involved? Because if a salesperson doesn't get involved till, you know, 40 people have joined a team at Microsoft to use the product, right? Like, you know, I want to speed up that journey, right? And so we created this, you know, kind of Canva coach model, but it was like, you know, someone who, you know, would work with those customers when they hit a couple of those thresholds and be able to, you know, be able to say, hey, let me do a training for your team. Like, let me help create 20 templates to complement the 20 you just already built. Like, you probably want a corporate presentation, you want business cards, you want, you know, employee signatures. Like, let me show you how to do those really quickly and build your brand kit. And so again, like, we were able to kind of think about this baton passing back and forth, you know, between product and sales, and like, augment it with the right people. And so I think that was, you know, something that was really, you know, fun to see and kind of get that validation on. And we met regularly. We were always adapting together. And I think that's the key too, is like, you don't, you kind of set those invisible lines and then like wait for things to kind of work naturally. You have to like test, measure, you know, test again and reassess. And that's where we have to kind of be very fluid in this. And so I think there was a lot of great examples. I think the product org, you know, was a major part of their DNA at Canva too. Obviously, it's a product and design company that was, you know, great at PLG. And so they had that DNA, you know, mastered. I think me coming in with my teams being layered on top was kind of fun to be like, you know, this new, you know, kind of superpower for them to kind of layer in and, you know, allow me to kind of tap into.
That's awesome. That's so cool to have that experience too, kind of coming into it on top of that strong PLG org. And, you know, I think, you know, when it feels like when a lot of people think about, well, how can product help sales? It usually has to do with like layering some sort of CTA into some sort of product, or potentially, of course, changing the way a product works to make it more sellable, like that kind of thing. And I think piece that doesn't get as much attention, which is what you hit on, was just access to data, usage data, thresholds. And of course, a good PLG group is going to be thinking about like, okay, well, when they've almost used all their, I don't know, Canva thingies, we're going to show them an option to upgrade their plan, you know, self-serve and portal or something like that. But it could be usage or it could be behavioral, like you said, number of users, like that kind of thing, that paints a picture that, well, wait a minute, maybe someone should have a conversation with these folks and make sure they're getting the best value out of our products there. Connect them with sales. It's an unsung part of how product can support sales, I feel. I don't know. What do you think, John?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm smiling too. And I think like, you know, back to the adapting piece, and I think that's what's really great about your podcast, David, is that, you know, it is truly a, you know, constantly evolving, developing, you know, concept that we're working through. It's continuously getting better. I think all the things that have been done, you know, are great to learn from. You get to stand on the shoulders of giants and learn from their mistakes and, you know, get access to that. I'm one of the things that kind of even, you know, was interesting for me was, you know, you talk about like product qualified leads, PQLs is something that kind of comes out too, as you think about a sales led motion coming in. And I would say like one of the things we quickly learned at Canva too, is that the concept of, you know, product qualified leads didn't necessarily work as we transitioned from a consumer or SMB to this enterprise context. And I'll explain that a little bit better, but I think the neat thing was that, you know, 40 people who signed up at Microsoft, you know, did it probably unbeknownst to their boss or their boss's boss and probably just said, hey, I need to do my job and this is an easier way to do it. So I need this tool. And so they went out and bought it there. But you know, when you think about them as a product qualified lead, like going to sell to them, like when we reached out, they were like, please don't tell my boss. Like if my boss finds out, he'll ask me to like shut this off.
I call right? these shadow vendors.
Yes. Shadow it was vendors. A shadow IT purchase. So they were like, yeah, like we love the tool. You know, it helps me be successful, but please don't tell anybody, you know? And it's like, okay, I get it. Like, I don't want to blow up, your situation here. I get it. And what we ended up trying to realize was when they get to that kind of 40 person kind of momentum stall point area, it becomes more of a product qualified account. And that was the, you know, the thought of like, okay, if you're going to go now prospect into the CMO, you know, you're going to call them, you know, now at this point, and you're going to call, you know, a couple clicks ahead of the team that's even using it. Right. So you can reach out to them and again, not to blow them up and call out their usage, but just to say, look, I think we've got a tool that can really help you. Here's how we're helping other companies in your space. This is the advantages that they see from it and why you might be a good fit for it. And then it becomes actually a kind of flip of the situation because, you know, oftentimes whenever I'm being sold to, you know, my first reaction is like, do I have time, money, and resources to implement a new tool right now? Like everybody's thinking from that concept, hopefully as a business owner. And so they'd be like, yeah, it's going to be really hard to adopt. I don't know if my teams would get on board. And it's like, well, that's great that you brought that up. We actually know that there's a team internally that started to use it, and we'd love to make them, you know, kind of a champion in this process and really kind of showcase their usage. So you make them the hero in the story, and it really, you kind of changed the way that we kind of, you know, went to market and were able to kind of, you know, crack the code of how do you break out of the business unit and go after a larger part of the organization.
Yeah, that's such an attractive yet tricky part of having a B2B product with more of a PLG or self-serve motion and trying to surface it into these broader accounts with the bigger org and not making us getting someone in trouble for circumventing IT. Or I could imagine the CMO being like, why is HR using Canva to create creative for our company? Like that should be, you know, our official way, like that kind of thing. But it's such a big opportunity. But yeah, obviously a really tricky dance there.
Yeah.
Well, John,
last comment. I'm sure you get a lot of folks saying this on your show. And, you know, I'd say like, I talked to a lot of my peers at the time and continued, and like the tricky dance is absolutely right. Like you nailed it. I felt like my sellers at one point were like, hey, I'm just going to email the CMO and say that there's a team of 40 people using it. And like that turned into like, hey, let me forward you to IT and shut this down. You know, and so it was like, the art of the dance was an important thing there. And that you had to think about like, you know, let's make them the heroes in this story. Let's bring them to the forefront at the end of the sales pitch, not at the beginning, you know, and like, let's use them as a way to be able to get traction and momentum early and highlight that there's a need, you know, to have a solution like ours in place.
Well, that may be your most valuable tip of the podcast, John, because that's not an easy one to solve for. but thank you so much for joining today. This has been really informative. I really appreciate it, John.
Yeah, likewise, David. Great to reconnect with an old friend. And yeah, excited to talk shop anytime and had a great time on the show today. So thanks.
Excellent. If you'd like to learn more about what John is up to, you can check him out on LinkedIn or visit demandbase.com. Thanks, everyone, for joining us for the Growth Stage podcast. If you'd like to learn more about FastSpring and how we can help you sell globally and keep your engineering team focused on your products, visit FastSpring.com. Thanks, everyone, for joining, and enjoy the rest of your day.